I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next Hot Docs interview is with Suzanne Regina Moyes, and she has put together a brilliant film that you're going to absolutely love. The music is incredible. It is an exploration of all things human, it seems to me. And we had a marvelous chat about her new film called Raving Iran. It is about music. It's about a subculture within a country that we as Canadians, we as Westerners don't really understand much about. It's about the little things. It's about the splash and ripple effect. Suzanne and I talk a great deal about notions of freedom and claustrophobia and expectations and what does it actually mean to live a normal life. This was a really fun interview for me, and I think you're going to love this film. So make sure you get out and see it if you can at Hot Docs, and if not, I'm sure it's going to be available soon. Keep looking for it online, Raving Iran, and my interview with Suzanne Regina Moyes is coming up. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest here at Hot Docs, Park Hyatt Hotel. I've got this series of interviews today. I'm excited as, but anyway, we're here with Suzanne Regina Moyes. Yes?
Yes.
Oh, hello, and everyone. Now affectionately referred to as Sue for the rest of this interview. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Really appreciate your time. And really quickly, what's the experience at Hot Docs like been for you so far?
Oh, it's been so far absolutely amazing. I mean, especially today, the weather is really nice.
Yeah, the sunshine's glorious, right?
Yes, it's fantastic. And the last days, I saw some really good films and went to great talks. So yeah, it's been really good.
So you've actually been able to enjoy it.
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
totally.
Sometimes.
And I've never been to Toronto before. So,
oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, well,
so
welcome.
It's just one of the streets.
So. Welcome to the city.
Thank you.
So congratulations on the film, Raving Iran. Fascinating film. I'm going to be honest with you. When Ryan sent me the note, I looked it up. I wasn't sure I was going to enjoy it. And you know what's interesting to me about doc films? Some films, you watch doc films and you go, wow, that was an important film. Everyone needs to see it. But I don't know that I really enjoyed it, right? But yeah. I love this film. I so
Thank
love
you so
this
much.
Film. The music is compelling. Yeah. The imagery, the visuals, Anoush and Arish, the two characters, I fell in love with these guys. And
great,
their
thank you so much.
They're characters, they really are. Great senses of humor, clearly political, I guess, in their own right. So tell us a little bit about the film and what it's about, I guess, without giving too many spoilers, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And maybe how you were drawn to it. I'm fascinated to hear the story behind how the heck you ended up here.
Well, I guess how I got into it was I read a small article in England in a magazine about 5 years ago about these parties in the Iranian desert. And that was the starting point. I just got this picture in my head of these small Burning Man type festivals in a country with one of the most oppressive political regimes. And this is how I got started. And then, obviously, to actually tell a story, I need a protagonist. So I signed up on Facebook and started to, I don't know, how do you say, infiltrate the whole, you know, the whole scene. And
started digging a little bit?
Yeah, started digging
and
a bit.
And were you really specific about it, like looking for Iranian kind of musical artists?
Oh, absolutely.
Artists?
I really knew what I wanted
really
to
focused.
Do.
Really focused?
Yeah. So I was really, I was looking for the, you know, underground music techno scene.
Sure.
And, you know, Facebook is obviously amazing for that because you see who's friends with who, you can see pictures, you know, and you get already, before you even meet someone, kind of an idea of what kind of life they're leading.
Sure, yeah.
So
it's true. Facebook is
for this
good
is,
that
you
way,
know,
isn't
I'm
it?
Actually, I'm not a great fan of Facebook,
yeah,
and I'm
not
on Facebook.
Either.
But
I've been playing with it. I'm a latecomer. I've just started playing with it in the last year, actually.
Yeah, but so. It's. I mean, for this kind of project, it is. Yeah, it has been fantastic.
There is a film I saw a couple years ago called Silvered Water, and it's. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a doc, and it's two filmmakers that met through Facebook, and one of them was exiled from Syria. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a Syrian in country, in Aleppo. And through Facebook, they communicated, and he directed her as she went around the city filming.
Fantastic.
And then they cross-cut it with archival footage. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And this is a result of Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, it really
absolutely.
Is quite remarkable. So when you went in, Sue, how many, would you say, assumptions did you have about Iranians or about Iran or about the regime that you had to change along the way, you know? Things about maybe the people or about the culture or the politics.
I guess when I started, I had probably a very similar perception to what most people have, which is kind of clouded by Western media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have this image in your head of obviously a very oppressed society, you know, women have to wear chadors, you know, kind of like a general, just general depression, just claustrophobia,
right.
Basically.
Right.
And this was definitely something I experienced differently when I actually, you know, got there and started to research and started to hang out with my protagonists and, started to tell their story, basically.
How did you? I love the word claustrophobia because I think that really kind of is what oppression really is, isn't it? It's just this sense of being boxed in, not being able to get out, no way out, lack of freedom, all these things. But maybe a little more, a little more relational, maybe, instead of talking about oppression. That sounds very top down.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, the claustrophobia which I expected, it is definitely there. But it's just, it comes in different shades. And how can I say, sorry. And I mean, what really surprised me in the end, and what I think is also quite apparent in the film, is that people have actually managed to, most of them managed to lead like a normal life,
right.
How we, you know.
Sure.
Kind of similar to how we live.
Sure.
You know, it's just, it's an Islamic country, so things kind of happen more behind closed doors anyway. You know, it's also, you know, starting with the whole architecture is different, so they don't, you know, if things are just different.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you have a bit of a disclaimer. I don't know if it's a disclaimer, if you'd call it that, at the beginning of the film, saying that because of some of the situations you wound up in, you had to shoot a lot on cell phones.
Yes.
I think that adds to that claustrophobia, frankly, and creates the tension.
Yeah.
That clandestine kind of, these guys are like spies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even for me, so many wonderful shots in the film, but one of the greatest shots for me is near the end of the film. I think it's Anoush, and you've got a shot from the front of the taxi cab, and his face is kind of covered by the headrest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fade to black, I think, and then we find out kind of where we're going.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So I think you really did communicate that sense of not being able to get out, in a sense. Yep. Also literally with their story, but also technically as well.
But, I mean, I didn't, obviously I didn't choose the means of shooting or the camera, my technical equipment, because I wanted to tell a certain story, but I was forced to use it.
Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I was forced to use it because I was shooting illegally, I didn't have a permission, and I've had to find different ways of, you know, getting footage, basically, to actually tell this story.
I love the irony of that, that the oppressive regime actually had an impact on how you created the film, which I, for me anyway, it actually played into the story that you're telling.
I think in the end it's an act of rebellion, you know, from my side as well as the protagonist.
Right. The music is amazing. The music,
thank you.
Yeah, the music is amazing. It just pulled me in on a variety of levels. I felt like I was having a bit of a spiritual experience.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. It was wonderful. And here I was at this kind of rave in the desert, and then a little later we find out where they wind up as well. But did you feel that as well from a musical perspective, or would you say you were drawn to these guys because of their story on Facebook? And that's sort of what pulled you in. Because I want to get to Anoush and Naresh. Why did you wind up with Blackbeard?
I mean, to your first question, I chose the music because this is how I felt the situation, how I experienced the situation, and I was basically just underlining it.
Right.
Rather than, you know, putting my music on top of it and trying to create an emotion. Trying to create emotion which wasn't there, but it was actually there. And so your second question was Anoush and Arash, how wound up with them?
Yeah, why those guys? I mean, I bet there's not a lot of Iranian DJs. Is that?
There are quite a few, actually. There are more than you think.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The whole subculture going on?
Yeah,
there,
you know, the whole scene is quite big.
Yeah.
I think Anoush was actually someone recommended to me right at the beginning.
Okay.
Because the first thing I did actually try to get in touch with people who are living in the desert and were kind of organizing it, and kind of through them I got in touch with Anoush. But it took, and from his pictures I just knew he would be the perfect person.
Yes, right.
Yeah, and this, but it took me quite a while to actually get through to him, and then even longer to actually gain the trust and be able to shoot.
I bet it did. So did you just have to hang out for a while to gain that trust?
Yeah, we hung out for a while, and then I went back to Switzerland for a few months, and we kept in touch, and then I went back to actually start the shooting, but it was very difficult.
You shot it over a very short period of time. About 12, 14 months, something like that?
Yeah, about that.
Mm-hmm. I saw it as a bit of a road movie.
Yeah, it is. You know, this is exactly what I say. It's a road movie. It's a journey.
Yeah, it's a journey, right? Yeah, totally. Yeah, this and the tension, you know, you create is palpable. I mean, just really quickly, we got a couple musicians. We're not going to tell everyone what the story is here on the podcast, but in the interview, you got to go and see this film. It's
Please come and
absolutely.
Come and go and see.
Was it the world premiere here?
No, I had it in Switzerland weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Nice, excellent. Oh, that's great. And the reception's been.
Honestly, it's been absolutely amazing. I won a prize at Vision du Réel. It's one of the big documentary festivals in the world.
Nice.
And this is my second stop, and now I'm off, I don't know, for the next 2 months.
What's so interesting to me is the celebration-like nature of the film. Like, this is a film about oppression, claustrophobia, politics. This is about freedom. This is about some pretty heavy, serious issues, right? You're filming illegally, all these things, and yet there's this real playful edge to it for me. You know, these guys have this wonderful relationship. They care about each other deeply, and they want to play their music. This is about community celebrating with others in some way. So we're gonna do it one way or the other, right?
I mean, that was my intention to you know, I mean any film you make in Iran is political.
Yes.
But I really wasn't. I was trying not to make a political film in the sense of using news footage, you know, what you often see when you watch documentaries about Iran. you're kind of cross-cutting between, you know, television stuff and...
Right, old black and white footage.
Exactly, yeah, and then back to your protagonist. And which on the one hand, made it really hard for me because I couldn't really... For me, it was hard to install this feeling of oppression and also to create a picture of the antagonist. But at the same time, I think it allowed me to just have like this very subtle feeling, to create this very subtle feeling of my surroundings.
Well, I think for me, it's so sort of compelling too is just because of their relationship and their friendship.
Yeah.
There's a moment when they come, they do arrive outside of the country, and I think it's I can't remember who it is. Arash, maybe he's sucking a sucker.
Oh yeah, and the lollipop.
His lollipop, and he puts his elbow right on.
I love the scene.
It's such a beautiful moment. It's such a great film. And you go, this really humanizes the issue, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a political film in that strict sense, but wow, this is actually impacting ordinary people.
Exactly.
Ordinary
this is where
lives.
I wanted to, actually put the film, right in the middle of society.
Right.
And I think I really wanted to tell, a big story through, I wanted to tell on a meta level through a small story, if that makes sense.
It totally does. It humanizes it.
Exactly.
It humanizes it in a way that a documentary may be about what was going on at the time politically or looking at the more oppressive regime. You know, we get a little taste of the arrest and so on and so forth and what happens there, but we don't go inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't, I suppose. But we don't get all the details, but we get enough to know that this is changing the way these guys see the world, right? In a huge way.
Yeah.
Do you think they're political? Do you think they had a sense for how important what they were up to in this film might be?
To be honest, I don't think so.
Hmm.
And I think these my two wonderful protagonists, they're portraying a very large group of youngsters in Iran, which are usually not portrayed in any films. I mean, you either see films about the Green Wave, the very politically active voters, or you see, the very traditional, chador wearing, other end of the spectrum. And I really think they're portraying, this group of youngsters who are actually apolitical, quite hedonistic in many ways, and, disillusioned, I think. Disillusioned and paralyzed.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you get the sense from the time, you must have spent a fair bit of time in Iran, but did you get a sense from others that you met that there was this overarching desire to move west, to get out?
Yes, I would say everyone. Mm. Almost everyone wants to move.
Is that right?
I mean, there's a few women I met who said, like, oh no, they're actually happy in Iran. But a lot of the kids do want to go. But interestingly I also met a lot of, young people who actually did go to the West because they did have enough money. They could actually afford to go and study abroad, but many of them came back.
Mm.
And I think this is actually the core of the story. It's so much, I think what the freedom we actually have in the Western world is we have the freedom to compare.
Mm.
We have the freedom to go somewhere and test out life in a different situation and then compare this and then actually decide where I'm coming from is actually quite nice. And I think because they can't do it because of their political situation, they can't, they can't get visa to actually travel to other countries. That's the core of the problem because they can't compare and the whole image of the Western world is so overloaded with these glorified ideas of what it's like that... Yeah.
Can you talk to me a little bit about their experience? It comes through a little bit in the film when they land in the West. Can you tell me a little bit about their expectations? What did the internet do? What is globalized? Being on Facebook, seeing photos and so on. They've clearly been influenced by the West based on the clothes they wear and the sunglasses and the music and even the artwork on the album, I suppose, in some ways. I don't know that whole music scene too well. But, you know, one of the comments is, look at the gas prices.
Yeah, yeah, that's
which
funny,
I thought
yeah.
was hilarious.
Yeah, I had yeah. to put that in.
Yes. Okay, just can I say this too on the side? Probably my favorite line is, and I think it was from one of them calling his girlfriend saying, why did you pick such a shitty country?
Oh, yeah.
My favorite line. Yeah, that was awesome.
I had a lot of laughter in the cinema on Sunday.
I bet there was. I bet there was.
Yeah.
So yeah, expectations. So expectations.
Their expectations.
What did they, you know, they came, you know, what did they feel?
For me, it's very hard to say. Mm. I kind of know what the majority of their friends are thinking or hoping when they get to the West. They obviously hope, like, they have these hopes like any other, you know, young artist, that they become famous and, you know,
yes,
and
sure,
the
sure.
world is waiting for them.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know, because I actually, you know, even during shooting, I was always telling them, hey, you know, the West, it's not that easy. There's a lot of competition. There's loads of DJs out there, loads of musicians, you know, don't, it's not going to be,
it's
you know,
not a cakewalk.
Exactly. It's not pink fluffy clouds.
That's right. Yes. Well, they must've got then that one scene where they're at the festival, they must've got a bit of a taste of that. You don't really
delve too much
into that in the film.
They were never very excited. I mean, as you can see in the film, I think there's a very brief moment of euphoria.
Yes, yes.
Actually at the festival, but the rest of the time I think they were just nervous, and they knew they had 5 days in Switzerland to choose what they wanted to do. So the whole thing was, you know, yeah, they had a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, yeah, there must have been on some level, obviously, a sense of euphoria and excitement, and I think Anoush touches on that. But there must have been a bit of a letdown as well, I would think. But maybe not. Maybe not. It's because just this idea of what they must have been coming to, of what they've read about or what they've seen online, and et cetera.
I think what was definitely different or surprising to them, I mean, they realized probably only in that moment that they're only like a small part of like a huge group.
Right, right.
You know,
yes.
They arrived,
yes.
They were like, I don't know, 250 other DJs arriving, which, I mean,
wow.
Something like this they probably have never experienced.
Right.
So they
not.
Just became part of this, you know, big crowd.
Yeah.
Whereas in Tehran, they're like the mini superstars.
They're mini superstars,
you know?
Right, yes, yes, yeah. Fascinating the way you edit and piece together the sequence for the two of them trying to get their record, their album printed, mm-hmm. and well, basically just designed and printed, I suppose. They'd already had it designed, and you've got this almost montage-like sequence of them going from print shop to print shop or design shop to design shop. Fascinating how the being just continuing, you know, they just get shut down for one, what we would just go, really? Are you kidding me? That's why they wouldn't do it for you? Like, and you start to get a sense for this, well, I guess that oppression again. We're talking a little bit more about that claustrophobia, stuff that they live with, these Iranians live with each and every day,
mm-hmm.
stuff that we wouldn't put up with for a day.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Remarkable, actually.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Would you say there's a sense of hope in the people that you met, that things are changing, things are maybe getting a little bit better? Changes around the corner?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, society is as, the variety of people is as big as here. So,
sure.
You know, some of my friends were very hopeful, others weren't. I think it's also, it depends on personality, really.
Yes.
But what I could really see with, you know, a large amount of the young people is, like I said before, I think they are literally paralyzed. They're just caught in this bubble, but you know, not a rainbow bubble. But
I love the scene where they go to where they have to fill out forms to get approval. Is it for the CD itself, for the art? No, they want to do a concert.
At the ministry, Ministry of Culture, yeah.
The Ministry of Culture, yes. Yeah. And so the woman behind the desk says, I think as she's looking at the artwork, have you lost your mind?
Yes.
I mean, it's on one level kind of tragic, but I think she even smiled.
Yeah, she like even she smiled. Saw
the,
I mean, yeah.
What are you guys, crazy?
Yeah.
Of course this isn't going to get approved, right? Yes. This is just, and this is the way we live here, right?
Absolutely.
This is normal life.
Yeah. And yeah, that's actually an interesting scene because I think some people might think, oh yeah, it sounds a bit set up because they're asking like, let's say, maybe bit stupid questions.
Yes.
But they really didn't know because things are changing all the time. And, you know, and so they're always confronted with,
so many different, so many different factors, right?
Yeah,
so many different things are playing into this. In a scene like that, were you hiding the camera at that point?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, I wasn't with them. I sent these two in, but it took me about 6 weeks to prepare the shoot. I mean, we went there several times to check out the building, see where people are. How are we getting, are we getting checked at the entrance?
It's like Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's a bit of, like a documentary, sci-fi documentary.
Yeah, it really is.
That was shot on iPhone, and which I placed in a bespoke tailored shirt, which I got made at the bazaar.
So cool. It's like a magic trick.
It's like mafia. Yeah.
It's like mafia stuff. Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah,
this is like your almost like a spy gear, right?
Yeah.
And did you ever feel that you were, you must have felt on edge more often than not. I mean, even some of
I felt on edge all the time.
You did, eh?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Because, you know, also after shooting, I mean, I always had to cross half of the city to actually go back to where I was staying.
Right.
And I had always, I had technical equipment with me. I had all the footage, which I just shot with me. But what I started doing is I had a memory card with tourist pictures, which I always put into the camera. And I hid the cards with the footage in my bra.
Oh, right. So you had something to give...
Exactly,
and it did happen. If you were pulled over.
It happened quite often that they, stopped us and they took the camera off me and actually checked the pictures.
I bet.
Yeah. But I think it was an advantage to be female, actually, because I get asked that quite often.
Interesting.
So I was just always like the smiling girl on the back seat.
Has there been any reaction to the film politically, or has any statements been made? Is it out there enough yet for you to really know?
Yeah, it was actually I have a very successful trailer, which is out there.
And we're going to put a link to that on the website.
Thank
for
you
sure.
very much.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
That's really cool. The trailer actually played on Persian satellite TV.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, at prime time. They must be aware of it. But I actually haven't seen any response.
Any
but
reactions?
I have to ask my Iranian friends.
There probably will be, I would think, but maybe not. Maybe they'll just go, well, we'll ignore this and it'll go away kind of a thing. But you know what? What I love about this, Sue, is that this becomes now, when we look back, you and I won't be able to, but years down the road, we'll be able to say this was a part of the conversation. And that's, I think that's what's so remarkable about film. It's what's so remarkable about documentarian filmmaking or documentarians and documentary style filmmaking, and especially films like this. And I think you've done just such a wonderful job of I don't know, speaking to such a political issue in a really tangible, human relational way.
Thank you so much. That was
really,
my intention.
Yeah, really, really, really resonated with me and sounds like it's resonating with your audiences. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up here, what's next for you?
I'm having my second screening in about an hour.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and I need to rush off to that one.
Have you got your, you're on your way, grab a coffee and head over. Are you on your, do you have another project in mind? You're going to take something maybe a little easier, with a bit of an easier approach?
No, I think it's going to be even harder. But I don't want to talk about it because it stresses me already.
It's already stressing you out. Well, hopefully in a couple of years' time, we'll be able to do a follow-up interview on that film. And thank you so much for your time today. The film is Raving Iran. It's playing at Hot Docs this week. And check it out online, ravingiran.com. And check out the trailer for sure. And Sue has been with us here today. Thanks again so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.